Ohio's recreational cannabis law makes clear that it does not allow anyone under the age of 21 to possess or use the drug. But the law governing the use of medical cannabis in Ohio, just like the medical cannabis law that will take effect in Kentucky in 2025, does allow even people under 18 to use the drug under certain conditions. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. How much do we know about how medical cannabis affects developing brains, or how effective it is for children? Joining me in this recorded interview to explore those questions and explain how medical cannabis is used for children are Yale School of Medicine Associate Professor of Pediatrics, Dr. Prasanna Anand. Thanks for being here, Dr. Anand.
Thanks for having me.
Nemours Children's Health Division Chief of Palliative Medicine, Dr. Alyssa Miller. Welcome, Dr. Miller.
Hi, nice to be here.
And University of Cincinnati Professor of Neurology and Epilepsy Center Director, Dr. Michael Privatera. Thanks for being here, Dr. Privatera.
Thanks for having me, Lucy.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. As I mentioned, Ohio's medical cannabis law does allow minors, people who are under the age of 18, to use medical cannabis. How common is this really in practice, Dr. Miller, in your experience?
In practice, I would say it's not very common at all. I probably certify 5 to 10 children a year for medical cannabis here in our tri-state area of Delaware, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey. I would say maybe double or triple that ask about it every year, but their children aren't eligible for one reason or another.
Do doctors prescribe medical cannabis? Do they refer patients to it? How does that all work?
The public is used to physicians prescribing medications where we say what medication, at what dose, and how many times a day. But for medical cannabis, what physicians do is we certify that a patient is eligible under the state law, and we sign a piece of paper with that certification, and then the family takes that to the state to get a medical cannabis card. And from there, the physician has some oversight responsibility to make sure everything's going okay. But in terms of dosing and number of times a day, it is really out of the hands of physicians. And that's what makes this confusing and complex and uncomfortable for a lot of physicians and families.
Dr. Miller, what conditions would this be recommended for?
It's different in every state based on the state law specifically, but the American Academy of Pediatrics recognizes that children with life-limiting or severely debilitating conditions may benefit from medical cannabis. It is commonly used for children with epilepsy, which I know Dr. Privatera is going to talk about, and then it is used for a number of other symptoms, pain and non-pain symptoms that children may experience during serious illness, including nausea and vomiting, lack of appetite, things like that.
Dr. Anand, I understand there are lots of challenges to recommending medical cannabis. Can you explain some of those challenges?
The formulations at the dispensaries are varying in terms of their active components. So the two main components that we talk about a lot are cannabidiol, or CBD, and THC, which is the more psychoactive component. And so, my understanding is that there are a number of strains available of medical cannabis at these dispensaries, and the dispensaries are generally regulated by state public health departments, but the staffing of the dispensaries can really vary. And so in my state, we actually have certified pharmacists who are in the dispensaries. That being said, there's not a lot of scientific backing for these different strains for the most part. And so they sort of make recommendations based on what they know. Our patients could get strains of medical cannabis that have, you know, an outsized amount of THC versus the CBD component. And so it's just so variable with differing potencies. The other challenge is that people are mostly familiar with smoking or vaping marijuana. And in general, you know, I take care of children with immunocompromised, and We don't recommend smoking marijuana because of the potential risk of exposure to carcinogens. We also generally recommend against vaping marijuana because of the potential exposure to fungus or molds. And so, you know, we would say try a gummy or an edible or a tincture or an oil. And you know, we just don't know sort of how strong or what the side effects might be for any individual child. The other sort of latent challenge that a lot of families experience is when their children get admitted to the hospital. A lot of hospitals, even in states where medical and recreational cannabis are legal, don't have formal policies around storage or use of medical cannabis. And so I know of a number of patients that have been routinely using tinctures at home, and then when their child gets admitted to the hospital, the in-hospital staff and pharmacists are uncomfortable with storing the medical cannabis product.
Dr. Privater, you've studied a drug known as Epidiolex, an FDA-approved CBD for children and adults with a severe form of epilepsy, but this drug does not contain THC. Tell us about what concerns you might have about prescribing or recommending medical cannabis for patients under the age of 18.
The work that was done with this drug that goes by the name of Epidiolex is really concentrated CBD. I mean, the patent on the drug really relates to their techniques of extracting all the THC, or essentially all the THC, out of it. So the clinical trials on this product started more than 10 years ago. We've been involved since 2014 at the University of Cincinnati at our epilepsy center. It clearly works for multiple different types of very resistant, very complex epilepsy syndromes. But a lot of people are taking it off-label too. Just like any drug, you know, it's up to the physician to prescribe the drug. Whether insurance will pay for it is usually another matter. But I would say, in contrast to what Dr. Miller was saying, we have well over 100 people at the Adult Epilepsy Center, and probably double that at Cincinnati Children's, who are now getting Epidiolex to treat epilepsy, a variety of different forms of epilepsy. And unlike the sort of medical marijuana, CBD comes by prescription. So I write a prescription for Epidiolex. Patients go to the pharmacy and they pick it up, and we know specifically what the doses are, what the titration is, and exactly what people are getting when we give it to them.
We're talking in this recorded interview about the use of medical cannabis for minors. Dr. Miller, I want to come back to you. You were talking before about how you don't actually prescribe to the patient. You can certify that a minor can get medical cannabis. First of all, just to clarify, are these typically patients who have disease that will lead to the end of their lives in a relatively short time frame? And then also, if you're not the person who is deciding kind of the dosage and what exactly they get, how does that get decided? Does that happen at a dispensary?
So as a palliative medicine pediatrician, all of my patients are children who are dealing with serious illness. About a third of my patients, unfortunately, will die from their illness, but about two-thirds will live into adulthood, sometimes with complications of their illness, living life with chronic illness, and sometimes without. So my patient population is relatively unique. Most of the children out there, thankfully, do not have serious illness. And then to the second half of your question, so when a child or when a family is asking us about medical cannabis, you know, the first question is, I want to know, are they eligible for any of the pharmaceutical substances that are out there, like Epidiolex? And we do have a lot more children on Epidiolex than we have on medical cannabis, like Dr. Privater said, because the studies just aren't there in medical cannabis, and we just don't understand necessarily the safety of the compounds. And so when a child goes to the dispensary or a family goes to the dispensary, again, it's very state dependent. Like Dr. Ananth was saying, in some states there are pharmacists on site. In some states there are required to be physicians on site. And in some states it's trained dispensary workers. And so families really need to know and understand the law in the state where they're living, and understand who they're getting their guidance from if they are trying to access medical cannabis for their child.
Dr. Ananth, how much do we know about whether medical cannabis is safe for children?
Yeah, unfortunately, we know very little. And the main reason that we lack scientific evidence is that for decades now, basically since the 1970s, marijuana has been classified as a Schedule I controlled substance. So by the federal government's guidelines, it basically is deemed to have no medical benefit. We know that that's not true based on anecdotal evidence. And unfortunately, a lot of the evidence around side effects for marijuana or, you know, habit formation, et cetera, are all extrapolated from studies of adolescents and young adults who use marijuana recreationally. So we really don't have robust scientific evidence, and that's where a lot of clinicians are given pause. And that being said, in the context of children with serious illness, you know, the calculus changes, where, you know, especially in my practice as a pediatric cancer specialist, you know, we prescribe a lot more toxic medications like chemotherapy, like benzodiazepines and opioids, medicines that have known habit formation and toxicity that can be life-threatening. And so what a lot of families will say is they're willing to try anything that might relieve their child's symptoms, physical symptoms, and give them a good night's sleep, even if it means trying a medication or a substance that doesn't have a lot of scientific evidence backing it.
So you mentioned, you know, that there's not a whole lot we know when young patients are getting treatment for something like cancer, a very, very serious illness. What's the calculus for determining, gosh, we don't exactly know what the neurological impacts of this could be, but the child is having the severe nausea or whatever? I mean, how do you balance all that?
Yeah, so as Dr. Miller was mentioning, we try the, you know, Food and Drug Administration approved medications first to manage those symptoms. And then when the symptoms are really refractory to a lot of those conventional therapies, we do consider medical cannabis. In my state, you can only access medical cannabis as a minor if you have a terminal illness, so that it's very, very minimal in terms of access. So, you know, at that point, where families are generally less worried about brain development and more about keeping their child comfortable. So I think then in those circumstances, it becomes a little bit easier. We also, you know, while we don't have a lot of evidence in terms of long-term side effects, in general, what we've observed is that medical cannabis is pretty safe, with not a whole lot of side effects. And as Dr. Privatera was mentioning, products that have predominantly the CBD component also aren't thought to be as psychoactive. And so, you know, the sort of concerning side effects of smoking or vaping marijuana aren't there when you use a product that's predominantly CBD. And so I think that we know some things about medical cannabis and different strains and products with different levels of CBD versus THC. But really the decision making is one that has to happen with families and clinicians, you know, collectively sort of thinking about the unknowns and the risks versus benefits.
Dr. Privatera, I believe you mentioned before that some patients end up using Epidiolex off-label. It's a question of whether their, you know, insurance will pay for it or not, I understand. But what are some of the ways that patients use Epidiolex off-label? How are there ways in which you've seen it be helpful for people?
The limitation that we have is that the clinical trials that were done for FDA approval were done for a very specific epilepsy syndrome. So it didn't cover everybody with epilepsy. It's just Lennox-Gastaut, Dravet syndrome, and tuberous sclerosis. So that's a very small proportion of the people at our place who have refractory epilepsy. Like, for example, in the United States, there's 1 million people who have medication-resistant epilepsy, and Epidiolex is probably approved for maybe 5 or 10% of those. So there's a large number of people who have various different types of seizures. Now, so those seizures would be technically off-label from FDA's perspective, but many of those people will use Epidiolex, especially if they've tried 5, 6, 7 other medications. So we'll try Epidiolex, and sometimes insurance will cover it and sometimes it doesn't. It's actually a very expensive medication to pay out of pocket for. But I did want to make a comment also on what Dr. Miller and Dr. Ananth were saying. There's a big difference between CBD and THC. So the THC component of marijuana is what helps the anti-nausea and to stimulate appetite. We know from the clinical trials of CBD, it doesn't do either of those. It doesn't really affect nausea. And at least in the clinical trials, patients were more likely to have appetite suppression than appetite stimulation, you know, which is kind of what THC has been used for years and years. You know, there is an FDA-approved synthetic THC called Marinol that adults have used in, it's been approved for cancer chemotherapy and for chemotherapy early on in AIDS when people had a lot more, the drugs were a lot less effective and people had a lot more anorexia or appetite loss.
Dr. Miller, you know, we've talked about how rare it is for children, for people under the age of 18 to use medical cannabis. But for those few patients that you have who do use it, how meaningful can this be for patients and for their families to have this as an option?
Oh, so interesting. I would say for the children where medical cannabis works and is helpful at managing their symptoms, it's enormously meaningful for the families. However, I would say that's only a coin toss. One out of every two of my patients where the family comes back and says, this is amazing, thank you so much. And the other half say, it didn't really help. And it's expensive. So the entire medical cannabis industry is going to be out of pocket for patients and families. Nothing is covered by medical insurance. And a lot of my families, unfortunately, can't afford it. And so some families don't even have the option of trying because of finances. So we have disparities arising there in terms of who can access medical cannabis through the state dispensary system. And then for those who can afford it, again, I would say, and this is just anecdotal, and anecdotes don't equal evidence, but in my practice, it seems that only about 50% of the kids have benefit. But again, when the child benefits, the family is enormously grateful. And so, you know, that's why this is propagating throughout the United States, and you're seeing more and more laws that allow access to medical cannabis for children with serious illness.
Dr. Ananth, what has your research found about whether pediatricians are comfortable with recommending medical cannabis for their young patients?
A few years ago, we conducted a survey of clinicians in pediatric oncology, exploring their beliefs and perceptions around medical marijuana. And what we found was that, in general, clinicians were actually very welcoming of medical cannabis for the potential to relieve symptoms, but expressed a lot of discomfort naturally around the lack of evidence in terms of potency, in terms of type of product, and that rendered it very difficult for many clinicians to actively recommend medical marijuana. But in general, there was a widespread acceptability. Clinicians were not so keen on patients smoking marijuana for some of the reasons I mentioned earlier in terms of carcinogen exposure, et cetera, but were very willing to consider it for children, even at early stages of cancer treatment. And naturally were even more sort of willing to recommend medical marijuana for children who had relapsed, refractory, or incurable cancer.
Dr. Privatera, would you like to see more in-depth research into the effectiveness of medical cannabis in children and adolescents? I mean, how tricky would it be to do that research?
Yeah, that's pretty tough. Having been involved in the clinical trials of research when CBD was still Schedule One, you know, I've done a lot of clinical trials in my career, you know, more than 50 trials of different, mostly in the area of epilepsy. That was by far the most complicated. We had to have a special safe. We had to have visits by DEA checking out every single thing. People had to bring back every little bit of it that was not used. And we had to have a special person from DEA come up and pick up the rest of it to destroy. I mean, it was really, really complicated to do a Schedule One study. So that's why I think, at least for many of the indications for the CBD, that Epidiolex, like I just did a quick search before, you know, earlier today in clinicaltrials.gov, there's lots of different studies on pain, autism, bipolar, anxiety, OCD, using CBD because it's been FDA approved, because it's such a hard thing to get a Schedule One drug approved. And it would be very difficult to imagine that, but it'd be very difficult to imagine them approving THC because of the abuse potential. I mean, they look very, very carefully at all kinds of drugs that they approve to make sure that there's not a potential for abuse. And we know that, you know, THC can be very effective, but it does have a substantial risk of abuse.
Well, I've been talking with Yale School of Medicine Associate Professor of Pediatrics, Dr. Prasanna Ananth, Nemours Children's Health Division Chief of Palliative Medicine, Dr. Alyssa Miller, and University of Cincinnati Professor of Neurology and Epilepsy Center Director, Dr. Michael Privatera. Thank you all so much for your time today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.